Last year we did, we completed Torah Mem Tes and we put him on Tanina, chapter 49, inside. And we said that now we're going to append to the Shir some interesting items, some Likuti Alochis that we're going to tell over outside. Just to review very, very briefly the highlights of this chapter on Likuti Moran, Rabbi Nizal started off by mentioning the fact that according to how great Hashem is, it would seem logical to say that the tiniest infraction against Hashem would justify the most severe penalty. Because again, everything, it depends, when we talk about insulting an individual, for example, what determines how serious the insult is considered to be taken? It depends on who's doing the insulting and who the one that's being insulted is. If a person insults a garbage cleaner, let's take that example, because of the fact that this party by nature is not used to being respected highly, an insult generally would have less of an effect and would be less traumatic than when a person insults the king or somebody that's used to being treated with the highest degree of respect, and such a person is insulted, it has much more of an impact. So that logically, if we are to understand that Hashem is the epitome of kavod, that the being that deserves the highest degree of kavod, of honor and respect conceivable, is Hashem, then logically the tiniest deviation from that by us should bring down the heaviest, instantaneous death, chas v'shalom. And yet, Rabbi Nizal says, we find that Hashem is filled with tremendous kindness, and it's with Hashem's infinite kindness that Hashem allows us to survive these infractions that we make against Hashem. And therefore, Rabbi Nizal says, if a person realizes this, with this as an introduction, there's no person who should possibly be able to say, I've done such a terrible thing against Hashem, or such bad things against Hashem, that there's no way for me to return to Hashem. Because in a sense, even the biggest tzaddik, it's impossible for him, or just about impossible, for him not to make some tiny infraction against Hashem. And yet, if we were dealing fair, if we were dealing with logic, logic would dictate that the minute this tzaddik, anybody, makes the tiniest thing against Hashem, does the tiniest act against Hashem, it would warrant immediate, decisive action on the part of Hashem. The fact that Hashem doesn't do that shows us that that's not what Hashem wants. That's not Hashem's way of acting. That by Hashem, the kindness far exceeds the harshness and the judgment. And as such, a person should use this as an impetus for wanting to do tshuva, and this should remove any obstacle that's holding a person back from doing tshuva. And Rabbi Nizal points out that at least when we talk in terms of tshuva, at least it should be in the category of shev al taseh. Rabbi Nizal makes mention of the fact that the most accurate definition of tshuva is when a person is placed in the exact situation again, a situation that the person had been in before, and they acted improperly, they did the wrong thing, and a person is put in that identical situation again, and rather than doing the wrong thing, the person goes ahead and acts properly, or they don't do what they did last time, which was considered to be incorrect, that's what's really classified as true tshuva. That's what really clears the person's slate from that stain or blemish that was placed on it when the person committed the sin previously. That's the second major thought that Rabbi Nizal presented. The third item, Rabbi Nizal stressed that it's extremely advantageous and good for a person to be able to still have a Yetzirah. In other words, where a person is able to serve Hashem with a Yetzirah. Because Rabbi Nizal says that the epitome of serving Hashem b'shleimus is when a person is serving Hashem with both his Yetzer Toiv and Yetzer Hara. So that, for example, if the most common term that we use about the satan is a passion, a fiery desire for committing a sin, Rabbi Nizal says that when a person goes ahead and does a mitzvah with a passion, with a fire, with a hislavus, that's when the person is taking the satan itself and using it to serve Hashem, using it to please Hashem, and the type of nachas that Hashem gets from that supersedes, is greater than the type of nachas Hashem would get if a person was serving Hashem only with the Yetzer Tov, without the Yetzer Hara and the Yetzer Toya. Because normally, we think of the Yetzer Hara in terms of this fire, this fiery desire. We find the Zohar HaKadosh tells us that the Torah says that Noach had three sons, Shem, Chom, and Yofes, and Chom was known to be the evil son who committed the disgraceful act against his father. Noach, different opinions of exactly what he did, and the Torah tells us that Noach HaTzadik cursed this son Chom. From him came forth the Cushim, the Canaanim, etc. And the Torah tells us, the Zohar HaKadosh says, that why Chom, who represents the wicked son of Noach, why was he called Chom? This shows his close attachment with the Satan, the Yetzer Hara. Because the Zohar HaKadosh says, what's the mission of the Yetzer Hara in this world? The Mechamein Gufei Debarnash. He warms up the body of the person towards sin. He warms the person to commit a sin. So we see that the Yetzer Hara is represented by this illegal, illicit type of warmth inside the person. And it's when a person utilizes whatever warmth they do have, whatever fire they do have, for serving Hashem, for running to shul. Running to shul takes energy, it takes calories, it takes heat. Where does that heat come from? It comes at times from this fire of the Yetzer Hara that's inside the person, that the person is bending towards Hashem. He's using it for the kavod of Hashem, and that's shleimus. This represents complete service of Hashem. These were the three major concepts that Rabbeinu Zal presented in this chapter. On this, about this, Rav Nosson Zal mentions a few interesting thoughts in the Likutei Halachos. First of all, in Likutei Halachos, Choshen Mishpot, Chelek Beis, Hilchas Matona, Halacha Hei, Ois Choftes and Lamed, Rav Nosson Zal there quotes a pasuk which Hashem said to Avraham Avinu, where Hashem says to Avraham Avinu, Ki yedativ, because I know, leman asher yitzave esbono ve'esbeisai achrov, that Avraham Avinu is going to teach his children and all the members of his household after him, v'shamru derech Hashem, and they will guard the path of Hashem, they will follow in the path of Hashem, la'asos tzedakah u'mishpat, to perform acts of charity and judgment. Hashem said to Avraham Avinu that the reason why I'm revealing myself to you and the reason why I want to be close to you is because I know that you are going to teach the members of your household to go in the path of Hashem. What is the path of Hashem? La'asos tzedakah u'mishpat. To do charity and judgment, and charity and fairness. Rav Nosson Zal points out, as all the Mephoshim say, those two terms seem to be contradictory. Charity means something above fairness. If fairness dictates that if I go to work, and I work 35 hours a week, and I earn X dollars, it's fair that those dollars which I worked to earn should be used for me, myself, and I, or at the best for my family, the members of my household. For me to take those dollars and give them away to somebody else, or give away any portion of that to somebody else, that's not within the realm of fairness. That constitutes charity. Charity is something that's not fair, it's above fair, it's above justice, it's above mishpat. It seems that these two are actually opposites. Fairness dictates in certain cases that this should be done. Charitableness, an attitude of charity, dictates the opposite. And yet this is called the Derech of Hashem. Hashem said, because Avraham Avinu is going to teach his children to follow in the Derech of Hashem, the path of Hashem, Lasa Istoko Mishpot, it implies that this is how Hashem behaves. Hashem does both Tzedakah and Mishpot. And we find there are other psukim like this. For example, the pasuk Mishpot Utzedakah B'Yaakov Ato Asisa. David HaMelech says, you, Hashem, have performed fairness, judgment, and charity in Yaakov Avinu, to the Jewish nation. What does this refer to? Rav Nosson Zal says, this is what Moshe Rabbeinu prayed to Hashem and begged Hashem to be zecher to understand when Moshe Rabbeinu said to Hashem, Chaydiyeni no derochecha. Hashem, please allow me to understand your ways. Because by Hashem, both of these items are true at the same time. Meaning, we know that Hashem loves justice. Hashem is oyhev mishpat, meaning Hashem says, if you want me to sustain you in this world is not free. It's not that you take anything you want. The Gemara says a person who takes an item, who gets any benefit, any pleasure out of this world, without making a bracha, without declaring Hashem as the owner of this item, and without praising Hashem through this item, that constitutes an act of stealing. So we see that Hashem is out for fairness. Hashem knows what's his and what's yours. And if you're looking to partake in anything that's Hashem's, you better acknowledge that it is Hashem. If not, you're a thief and you'll be penalized as a thief. There are laws in the Torah that determine how to deal with a thief. That's on one hand. And on the other hand, we know the same Torah says that if you've done thousands, millions, infinite number of things wrong and bad, you should know that there exists another quality, another characteristic about Hashem, in that Hashem is tzedek. Hashem is melech oyev tzedakah u'mishpat. Hashem loves charitableness also. So on one hand, He expects certain things from us, and we are definitely obligated to try our very, very best to do what's proper, what's right, and to live by the laws of fairness so that we should be worthy of receiving from Hashem. At the same time, once a person messes up, we tell the person that Hashem has another hand also. There's another side to Hashem whereby Hashem is capable of shifting gears and turning on an attitude of tzedakah, of charitableness, which even if it's not justified, even if it's not deserved, even if it's not warranted, if you ask for it, if you look for it, that exists also by Hashem. And Moshe Rabbeinu was begging Hashem to be able to understand, to give us the seichel, to be able to reconcile these two items, to be able to know exactly what's the balance. Because if a person misconstrues this, even slightly, if a person takes this out of proportion, a drop, a person could use this charitable attitude on the part of Hashem as an excuse for laziness. It's a mitzvah to get up in the morning and go to shul. I'm tired, it's cold, and Hashem is forgiving anyway. In other words, even if I'll do something wrong, we know Hashem is kind. Hashem is not going to light a match to me. He's not going to burn me. Hashem is good. I'll say I'm sorry and everything will be forgiven. And we know that the Torah definitely does not want that kind of attitude. At the same time, once a person has committed a sin, or thousands of sins, and a person takes the attitude that the type of punishment that's in store for me, according to how great Hashem is, what I did could never possibly be fixed, again, Hashem doesn't want that attitude. So a person has to know exactly when to turn on which attitude. And in fact, Rav Nosson Zal says that this is the whole trick of the Satan. The Satan plays flippies with the person. Right before a person's about to commit a sin, when a person is supposed to have busha, a person's supposed to be embarrassed. How could the Satan's trying to tempt the person to do something that would constitute going against Hashem? A person's supposed to say to the Satan, how could I? I'm so afraid of Hashem. What do you think? I'm nuts? Go do something. Hashem is watching and I'll do it. I'll be finished. Then the Satan fills the person with azus, with chutzpah, with a person who, this same person who believes that Hashem is in the room And Hashem is watching everything I'm doing, and Hashem knows every thought that's going through my mind, and yet the person goes ahead right in front of Hashem and does this disgusting thing, or thinks this disgusting thought. And then, right after the sin has been committed, when that's a time for a person to gather together all his guts and nerves about him, and as much as the person is embarrassed to face Hashem, to come before Hashem and say, Hashem, I realize I just did a horrible thing, which you have every right to want to do away with me for this, but I know that what you want to see from me is not just despair and not giving up hope. On the contrary, you want to see me pick myself up from the mud, from the slop, and put myself back together, stick my shirt in my pants, and get ready to start again, period. Try to get back on the horse, and maybe next time I'll be better. Maybe today I'll be better. Instead, that's when the Sultan fills a person with this embarrassed feeling. How could you come before Hashem now? After what you just did, you're going to try to start? Forget it. You've tried 50 times to start. Every time you botched up, you're saying it to Hashem is an insult. After you've messed up 50 times, and 50 times you came and said, I'm sorry, I'm not going to do it again. This is the 51st time. For you to say to Hashem, I'm sorry, is going to be an insult. Better don't say anything and just forget about Hashem, chas v'shalom, and maybe Hashem will forget about you too, and everything will be okay. And that's where the Sultan reverses it. And a person has to beg Hashem constantly to be zeicher to get to understand how Hashem deals with Mishpat and Tzedaka, and thereby how we are to emulate Hashem, to know when to turn on the fairness, when to turn on the charitableness. The Gemara says even when dealing with one's own children or one's own wife, a person has to use both the right and the left. Smol Deche, Yemin Mekarev. With one hand pushing away, rejecting, with the other hand bringing close. And so too with the Yetzer Hara, the Gemara says. Smol Deche, with one hand reject him, with the other hand bring him close. Because there are certain things you want to learn from this Yetzer Hara, certain benefits you want to get from him. Don't throw him away completely. Pick and choose what's good in him, what's bad in him, in order to be able to get the maximum results. This is one important item that Rav Nosson Zal mentions, and Rav Nosson Zal says that this is also the meaning behind the pasuk that we say Shabbos at Mincha time, when we say Tzidkoscha keharare keel, Mishpotecha tohaim rabo. That with Hashem's Mishpat, if Hashem ever wanted to turn on his Mishpat, his power of fairness and justice, tohaim rabo, each and every one of us could find ourselves in the thickest bottomless pit, in the epitome of darkness, because that's where we've gotten ourselves. And yet, at the same time, we acknowledge that as low as we are, Tzidkoscha keharare keel, Hashem's charitableness is as high as a mountain. So no matter how low we go, Hashem is way, way higher up, and the height is able to balance out the depth, and is able to always bring us back to Hashem. There's always a possibility of coming back and rectifying and doing tshuva in a solid way. This is one major item that Rav Nosson Zal presents, explaining this thought of a Derech Hashem that we mention in this Torah. A second interesting item that Rav Nosson Zal mentions related to this Torah, this is found in Or HaChaim, in Hilchos Berachos HaShachar, Halacha Hey, Ois Mem Hey. There Rav Nosson Zal points out that this concept that Rabbeinu Zal presents here, that true tshuva is only when a person is taken back to those places, those dirty places that he had been in originally, and he corrects, he's put through the same test again, and he corrects whatever needs correcting, that's what really, really constitutes true tshuva. Rav Nosson Zal explains, based on the Meforshim, based on the commentaries, that this is the concept of why, after the Jews went out of Mitzrayim, Mitzrayim represented a place of tumah. All the impurity of the world was found in Mitzrayim at that time. Magic, adultery, all kinds of, all the forces of the Satan were most prevalent in Mitzrayim. And yet we find that after Hashem took the Jews out of Mitzrayim, with all of those fantastic miracles and splendor and everything, you would think that they had been washed clean, they just took a nice shower and came out clean completely, and now Hashem would not allow them to get dirty again. And we find Hashem took them through the desert, through the Midbar, for a period of 40 years. And the Midbar, the Torah refers to it as a Mokoim Nachosh Saraf V'Akrov. The Midbar was a place of snakes, snakes and burning snakes and scorpions. What does the snake represent in the Torah? The snake represents evil. Nochosh and Satan are identical. The Zohar HaKadosh says Nochosh is Bigimatria Satan. This concept of leading them through the desert represented this concept of taking them back once again to a place of filth, to a place where it would be very, very difficult to serve Hashem. And if they would show, if they would pass the test this time in going through the desert successfully, this would rectify any blemishes that they had acquired while they were in Mitzrayim. By going through this test and passing it this time, this would correct their entire past. This is what's represented by this concept of the fact that they were taken through the Midbar, this Mokom Nochosh Sorof V'Akrov. Another example of this concept, that in order to do tshuva, the tshuva requires going back to that item you did before and correcting it. We have an interesting example of this that Rav Nosson Zal brings in the Likutei Halachos regarding, for example, the Churban Beis HaMikdash, regarding the whole concept of Tisha B'Av, how Tisha B'Av came about. The Torah tells us that when Moshe Rabbeinu sent the Meraglim, the spies, to check out the land of Eretz Yisrael, and they did, and they came back with a negative report, whereby it appeared that there was no way that the obstacles in getting to Eretz Yisrael were insurmountable, the Jews cried at that time. The Torah says that Hashem said to the Jews, because you're crying now, when it's not a place to cry, this day is going to be declared as a day of crying for the Jews throughout their history. And it was that day specifically, which was the ninth day of Av, on which the Beis HaMikdash, the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, and the second Beis HaMikdash, and many, many other tragedies took place on that day. Rav Nosson Zal brings, what does the Torah present as a tikkun? How do we rectify that pigam? It's those select Jews that get up at night, at Chatzos, and they are misabel over the Churban Beis HaMikdash. What do? They cry, they shed tears over the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. This is what makes the most outstanding tikkun in rectifying this pigam. Because the pigam was with tears, the tikkun is also with tears. It's a matter of going back to that same item and doing it right, using it for good. Just as with the satan aroused the person to commit a sin, how? Through fire. Now by taking fire and using it to do a mitzvah, taking that same fire, using it to do a mitzvah, that's what brings about a tikkun, a correction for any of the sins that were committed in the past with this same fire. These are most of the items that Rav Nosson Zal presents in the Likutei Halachos on this Torah. Any questions?
This, we talk about Hashem's kavod, and we make an analogy between a king, a very great king, and a subject. It doesn't seem like an apt comparison, because maybe something like we don't get insulted when we see a cockroach, failing to salute us. Well, you know, I mean, it's even though we're much, we're much taller than they are and more intelligent. It's, with Hashem, the comparison between a human being and a cockroach is far greater. So why it would seem almost like the whole concept is inappropriate?
No, because the Gemara says that the most ridiculous thing possible is a dal geya, a person that's very, very poor. Poor in knowledge, poor in intellect, or poor financially. And is arrogant, that's the most abominable thing. You know, it's disgusting. How a person could reverse it like this. And it's the same thing with Hashem. The analogy that you're using, the fact that the cockroach doesn't salute us, that's not the point. But if you would see a cockroach try to spit, if you would see a cockroach trying to spit at a human being, saying, you nothing, you nobody, that would be very, very insulting. And when we, chas v'shalom, commit a sin, The Torah says you're turning your back on Hashem. V'sartem v'avadatem lekim acherim. Committing a sin represents an act of turning away from Hashem. There's nothing that's more disrespectful than when you're standing in front of a person that or a being that warrants, justifies a certain degree of respect, and the person is able in an arrogant way to turn their back on that person. That's the point which is insulting. And this is the attitude that the Torah takes. In other words, the Torah is the one that says that this is the way Hashem looks at it. At the same time, this point of how do we compare the Gashmiistic world to Hashem, like how do we draw an analogy from a physical king, this is an item that's mentioned many times in the Gemara, in the Zohar HaKadosh. This pasuk, Nibsori Echse Elokai. Through my flesh and blood, I get to see Hashem. I get to understand the ways of Hashem. The Zohar HaKadosh says that Hashem designed the world in such a way where by studying life, a person gets a perspective of how to deal with Hashem. Otherwise, how could Hashem ever blame you for dealing, going against Hashem, not showing the proper respect for Hashem? How was I supposed to know? Did anybody prepare a rule book for dealing with Hashem? That's ridiculous. How in the world am I supposed to get any idea of how to deal with Hashem? The answer is, Malchusa da'ara, ke'en Malchusa da'rikia, the Gemara says, that Hashem designed kingdoms on earth to correspond, to conform with the concept of kingdom in heaven. And therefore, by a person studying royalty and things, how that goes in this world, a person can get an idea as to what's expected of us in terms of Hashem. Just like the Gemara says, that there's a special mitzvah when a king comes into a city, or a president, somebody of incredible honor, for a Jew to go out and see him. Why? What interest do we have in looking at any king other than Hashem, other than the tzaddikim? The Gemara says the reason is because by watching the actions, the whole procedure, as to how they're acting towards the king on earth, this will give a person an idea, a base to work from, to project the type of honor and kavod that's due to Hashem and that will be given to Hashem, lo sid lovay. So we see that definitely the Torah wants us to relate this world towards the next world, towards Hashem.
You said before that a person has to take the Yitzhar and use it to serve Hashem. An example is if you do a mitzvah with Islam.
Right.
Does that apply that any time a person does a mitzvah with Islam, it comes from the Yitzhar that you're using it?
In a sense, yes. Because the concept of fire is a concept of something that comes from the same side as the Yetzirah. In fact, Rav Nosenzal, on this chapter on the Kudaman, he relates it in one place to another chapter on the Kudaman, where Rabbeinu Zal discusses the Ma'irei Oyer and the Ma'irei Eish. Rabbeinu Zal there discusses the side of good versus the side of bad, and Rabbeinu Zal refers to the side of good as a concept of light, the side of bad as a concept of fire. So we see that fire represents the side of bed. Fire represents the left side. So that generally, when we talk about this concept of a mitzvah being done with fire, it's the fire of it that represents the drawing in of this other side.
But doesn't it also say, like, sometimes Rabbeinu Zal even gives a mashal about a person that he learns that the waters of the learning, like cool off, let's say the teva of the, you know, the fire to serve Hashem, finding that the fire is, you know, kedusha.
Which fire?
You know, a person says slava to serve Hashem, and the person learns, you know, Torah, so the water Torah cools off the fire.
Which means?
You know, applying that kind of, you know, it's a kedusha kind of fire. Or is that also a fire that was taken?
The answer here again, Rabbeinu's, it's the same. Why would you want to cool it off if it's a holy fire? The answer is that this, that's the answer. Because of the fact that this item is coming from this left side, because of the fact that this chamimus, this eish, is coming from the left side, is coming from the Yetzirah, that's why in dealing with this eish, it's a more delicate item than in dealing with mayim. This item, to take it and insert it into the Kedusha, is the proper thing to do. But even that alone is not enough, because you have to watch it. Even when you put it into Kedusha, You're dealing with nitroglycerin. Because this thing, you let it get a drop out of proportion, it can explode the Kedusha in the other direction. Because this fire, which was originally being used for sin, you want to bend it around and use it for Kedusha. Rabbein Yisrael brings in, I believe it's Torah Ayin Ches and Likudei Moharan Chelek Aleph, that when you do that, that's the right thing to do. But as you're doing that, be very, very careful that you don't, that you put a lid on it, that you provide an air conditioning system, meaning the study of Torah, to cool it off, because there definitely exists a danger. Since this is coming from the south, from the left side, there's a danger of it doing harm to you, even within the boundary of good, even within the area of Avodas Hashem.
Does Rabbi Yisrael say that Atzlus is the, you know, typification of the Yetzer
Hara? Right.
Applying its reasons, and you know, that is the opposite of that.
Mm-hmm. The answer is the Yetzer Hara comes in two forms. Here the question is, we know that Rabbi Yisrael brings in a chapter on the Likutei Moharan that the symbols of the Satan are depression and laziness. And we usually refer to those as a coolness, a coldness towards religion. The answer is the Satan comes in two major forms. One is a coldness and a coolness, and the other one is a fire and a heat. We once discussed that the Sifrei Kabbalah mentioned that the two major angels that represent the Satan are an angel by the name of Lil, Lamed Yud, Lamed Yud, Tuf. That's the angel which represents an iciness towards religion. There's another angel. When Esav Alosha got married, he married Mocholas Bas Yishmoel. Mocholas is Miloshin Necheles. Necheles means a ricket, dancing, happiness. There's a happiness of the Satan also. There's a happiness of something, again, warmth, fire. There's a fire of the Satan, and there's an ice of the Satan. And this is why the Gemara says Hashem has provided us with mitzvahs. When Hashem presents us with mitzvahs, Hashem uses a pair, Hashem provides them in pairs also. Loisiro levesa misholeg, that the Jews will not have to fear ice, ki chol beso lovush shonim, because the house of a Jew is filled with two mitzvahs that come in pairs. The different mitzvahs, mezuzah and ner Chanukah, tzitzis and tefillin, the other examples that are given of sets of mitzvahs, which combat these two concepts of the Satan, concept of fire and ice. In this chapter in Likutei Moharan, Rabbein Yisrael is focusing on the fire. In that other chapter, he's focusing on the ice, the coldness. Both are definitely true and both are factual. And this is why the Sifrei Kabbalah says that in terms of being penalized, a person who falls victim to the Satan, there are two different penalties that are given. One is fire, one is ice. Fire is those who are victimized by the fire of the Satan. Ice is for those that are victimized by the ice of the Satan.
So it seems that each power could be the Talmud or Kedusha.
Right.
So it's up to the person to use it for the good.
Of course.
So why, saying that, why is it said that the power is from the side of the Talmud and you're just using it for Kedusha? Like you said, like the fire is the Yetzer Hara, and using it for Kedusha, you know, instead of that, Hashem gives you this choice and you use it for evil. Like you seem to be saying a person does, as long as it's taking the Tumah and using it.
The answer is because basically, this term Eish, in other words, when we refer to Hashem Kaviyocho, and we talk about a concept of a right side and a left side, a good and a bad, usually the left side is assumed to be bad. The right side is assumed to be good. Within the right and left of Hashem Kaviyocho, the right side represents water, chesed, kindness, which goes together with water. The left side represents din, judgment, fire. Eish, the milui of Hashem's name Elokim, which is the left side, is Eish, is din. So we see that the default, the basic default is that fire is the Satan, the symbol of the Satan. We were told some inside information that you should know there's another side to this Satan also. There are sometimes he puts on a fake hat where he's not being fiery. Let's say you're looking for this fiery guy and you're ready to deal with him. I've squelched all the fire in me. Suddenly he comes in wearing a snowsuit. And now he's not coming to inspire you to do fantastic sins. He's coming here to inspire you to go to sleep. Go hide in your cave and sleep there. Go into a nice deep sleep in cold. When it's cold, it's good to sleep. Go there, hibernate there, stay asleep, and not advance in serving Hashem. That's medame, where this one who's on the left, who normally is assumed to be fire, makes believe he's on the right side, that he's a coolness. So you figure it's not the same guy, and really it is the same guy. But the normal manner that we refer to this satan, in other words, the usual terminology, is the mechamim gufei debanash. We were told the inside information that there's a second Gehenim for this other crowd that he deals with differently. Rahman al-Aslan. Okay. Continuing inside the Likut Iman, Torah Nun. Now, these chapters of Likut Iman, Torah Memches, Memtes, Nun, and Nun Aleph, that we're learning now, if you look in the Likut Halachos on the other forum, these are bunched together. They're all part of one set of solid chizuk that Rabbeinu Zal is giving to the person. Rabbeinu Zal begins Torah Nun, Hamachshava biyad ha'odom lahatoisa kiritzainai lamokim shehuroitza. A person's mind is within the person's control to maneuver it whatever way the person wants it, in whatever direction the person wants to lead it. Ukimavur b'mokim acher, and as is explained in another place on Likutei Moran, she'i efsher she'yihiyu shnei machshavois biyachad klal. It is a physical impossibility for a human being to maintain two different thoughts in their mind simultaneously. V'afilu im lefa'omim ho'ileches machshavtoi u'poirachas u'meshaitetes b'dvorim acherim v'zorim. And even if at times a person finds that his mind drifts away and it flies into things, his thoughts go into things that they're not supposed to, he starts thinking wrong types of thoughts, bad types of thoughts, strange types of thoughts, biyad ha'odom lachzor u'lahatoiso ba'al kocho el haderech hayosher. It is definitely within the person's power to return it and to turn it back against its will, to force the thought process back into line, back onto the right path, lachshuv masheroi, to think only about what it's proper for it to be thinking. Rabbeinu Zal says that if you want to think in terms of an analogy, this is identical to a concept of a horse that's being led on a road, and the horse suddenly starts veering off the road, trying to go to a place that it's not supposed to go, and it immediately turns back to the path, when there's a tug at the reins. The one who's riding on the horse tugs on the reins, and automatically the horse is pushed back into line. It's forced back onto the track. Ukiyotze, and similar. Umachziren oisoi bal korchoi eladerech hayosher. And in other words, by using the reins or whatever other method is used to push it back onto that track, it gets back onto the track. Against its will, even though its original desire was to start heading the other way, it's forced back onto the right path. Rabbeinu Zal says, "Kemoikein b'machshavo mamish." The identical concept holds true about the human mind. The human mind, at times, behaves like a behemoth. It takes on the properties of a sus, a horse, going off in its own direction, in a negative direction. And at that point in time, if a person puts on reins, straps, and pulls on the reins, pulls it back onto the right direction, a human being is definitely capable of pulling the thought process back onto the right track to get it to think only about what it's supposed to think. Now, the analogy that we used is not coincidental. The straps, the reins that are put on a horse, correspond to the tefillin. The ritzuos of the tefillin, that are worn on the head represent this concept that tefillin represent the meichin of kedusha, the highest level of holiness within the thought process. And it represents this tikkun, whereby by the mind also there is this concept of melech osur borohotin berehite meichin, as Zohar HaKadosh says. This concept of being able to take the sus. Sus represents malchus. David HaMelech said, the Gemara says about David HaMelech, hoyim esnam neim kesus. Sus represents the shame Aleph Dalet Nun Yud Ba'achirayim. Aleph, Aleph Dalet, Aleph Dalet Nun, Aleph Dalet Nun Yud is Bigimatria Sus, Kuvchavov. To take that and to put reins on it and pull it back onto the track is something that's definitely within the hands of a person. So that Rabbeinu Zal is warning each and every one of us here that there isn't an excuse. Even if your mind goes off the track for a second, or your eyes, which again are a perfect, the eyes are plugged into the brain, the eyes, the ears, the nose, the mouth, all of these things represent the brain of a person. And if they wander for a moment to where they're not supposed to, don't get destroyed, just put on a set of reins and pull it right back onto the track. And don't say that once it veered out of line, now it's very hard to get it back, because Rabbeinu Zal is stating for the record clearly, you should know that it definitely is within your power. So if you don't do it, it means you're not living up to what you're capable of doing. You're not fulfilling what you definitely are capable of doing for yourself.
So you're just giving an etzah you have to do, or you're just saying pull it? The etzah
is included here. The fact, his question was, is Rabbeinu Zal giving advice? In other words, he's presenting a problem here, and he's saying, do this. In other words, when this happens, pull it back into line. How? How do I pull it into line? It's drifting away. How do I do it? Rabbeinu Zal hinted in this chapter, he made mention of the fact that we have already stated in a previous chapter that it's impossible for two thoughts to be residing at the same time. So if a person sees that his mind is drifting off a track of Kedusha onto a track of Tumah, rather than start pulling your hair out or anything else, if you gently attempt to think about something completely different, something that could occupy your mind, whether it's counting sheep, whether it's looking at the difference in color between your shirt and your pants, whatever it means, some different, if a person could think a thought of Torah, if a person could bounce from a thought of Tumah into a thought of Torah, matayv umanoim. If not, any other thought will do. And you'll see that a human being is capable, even if the mind locks in on a thought of Tumah, and you feel it's as if I've gotten swallowed in quicksand, and now to pull out of it is going to take like a half hour to get my mind back onto a normal track. Rabbeinu Zal says, not true. If you'll attempt to insert a different page on the screen, a different thought, and just try to focus your mind on that thought for a second, you'll see that this other thought left, because both can definitely not be there simultaneously. Once this other one left, you're in business. Now just hang in there and get and stay back on the track.
Is the address also concentration, or is this just table?
Excuse me?
Is this address also concentration and kedusha?
Well, he's addressing that here by saying you should know that there is a set of reins that comes with the brain. So even if a person knows that my nature is that my mind is constantly drifting and wandering, you should know that as much as it's drifting, you're definitely in a position to just pull it right back. Second it drifts, right back. Drift, right back. The horse turns away, right back. Each time, like a rider is riding on a horse, and he's holding the reins very gently as long as the horse is going along the right path. The minute he sees that the horse sees something that it likes somewhere else and starting to veer off, gently pull back. It does it again, pull back. It goes the other way, pull back.
It's a point for time, so you just can't have two things at the same time.
Right.
The person's trouble concentrating on something. It's hard for him to keep an item of kedusha in mind. How do you maintain a concentration? Like you said, the answer before was just think about an item of good, and you can't think of two things at the same time.
Right, right.
How does that answer help for this particular?
You're saying in terms of the problem of a person who this happens to 100 times in a minute, like constantly drifting off. There again, we default to the Eitzah of Tefillah. person has to ask Hashem, allow me to lock in that when my mind is on the right thing, I should be able to make some solid commitment to it. It shouldn't be that I'm so loosely connected that I can get blown the tiniest wind and I'm blown off. Person's davening Shemayin Esrei, it's a 3-minute stretch, 180 seconds going from here to there. Person walks, goes for walks and trips and billions of things in the middle of that 180 second trip. And in terms of being able to walk right in that middle road and not get off the train and not go buying things and selling things, all the different things, that requires Siyata Dishmaya. Person has to beg Hashem, please help me to be able to stay on this track, to be able to concentrate that when I'm supposed to be hooked in, I shouldn't be loosely connected. The connection should be very tight so that the Satan can't pull me away that easily.
All of these illustrations up to now seem to preclude knowledge of the right path and the wrong path.
Definitely.
What happens when knowledge doesn't appear to be there within our realm and we don't perceive, yet we might be on the wrong path and we think it's the right path?
The answer is, the Gemara says that I forgot the term that's used, Rebbe Zal used to mention it, that when it comes to, like, it comes to traffic lights, for example, that mushal, person comes into a city, he starts driving in a car, and he goes through his first red light, and a cop stops him, and the cop says, do you know that you just went through a red light? He says, yes, most definitely. Do you know that that constitutes a transgression against the law in this city? No. Okay, here's a ticket. You broke the law, I have to give you a ticket. In other words, or if the cop decides to be very nice, he can say, okay, you didn't know, I'll let it go this time, but hey, if you're going to bring a car into this city, you better find out what the rules are. I don't know what planet you come from that they don't have, you know, they don't have any rules, but if you're going to be driving a car, if you're going to be walking in the city, you better learn the rules of that city, and so too with Hashem. There definitely is a responsibility. If a human being wants to live, exist in this world, unless the person conceives themselves to be the owner of this world, you have to perceive yourself as walking in somebody else's house. I don't own this joint, this whole place. I'm walking around, I'm existing in somebody else's place. It belongs to somebody. The whole world belongs to somebody. Belongs to somebody, I have to know what is that person like or what don't they like. In other words, one person enjoys hearing a lot of noise, let's say. So if I'm too quiet in the house, I'll get evicted. Another person likes quiet and peacefulness. If I start making a rush, I'll get thrown out of the house. They don't want to have that kind of company in the house. So too, when we are within the domain of Hashem, a person who acknowledges that we are within the place of Hashem, I have to find out what does Hashem expect, what are his likes, what are his dislikes, so that I won't, chas v'shalom, be rejected from within the domain of Hashem. And this is where there's a response. There exists a concept of tinoik shenishbo, definitely. There definitely is a concept of a child that didn't learn, that didn't know, that wasn't in a position to have any idea of right from wrong. But that applies up to a certain point. Once a child becomes of age, where the child does start understanding and does come to a realization that there is a concept of questioning and seeking and searching for truth and searching for what's right, at that point it becomes a duty, an obligation, a responsibility for the person to try to identify good from bad, right from wrong in this world, and to be able to start, once you identify what you consider to be right, to start living by that way. So in other words, there's a velo amhoretz chasid, the Gemara says, if a person doesn't know, he can't be very righteous. Therefore, that's why the Torah stresses the mitzvah of learning Torah as being so important, because without that, where do you begin? Without knowing, what does Hashem want? Does he like hot? Does he like cold? Does he like wet? Does he like dry? In each and every case, without knowing that, how could we possibly serve Hashem? Okay, Baruch Hashem. Let's see if we can sneak in one more small chapter on Likutei Moran. Torah Nun Aleph. Rabbi Nizal says, Hayetzer Hora Noikesh Ba'odom B'chol Pam. The Yetzer Hora knocks on a person's door every time, constantly, Uma'iraroi lama shema'iraroi, and he arouses the person to what he arouses the person. Vi'af im ein hodom shema'aloi, and even if the person turns a deaf ear to the Satan, Upaine oiref mimenu, and he turns his back on the Satan, Afal pikein, still, Chumekesh boi oid pam sheni ushlishi urevi v'yosa. This guy is very persistent. He comes back again for a second round, a third round, a fourth round, and even more than that. Avol, there's a but. Avol, but. Im ho'odom hu chozok bedatoi. If the person makes a firm commitment in his mind, the action neged hayetzahara, and he makes himself stubborn against the Yetzirah. I'm going to be stubborn. I'm going to be obnoxious. No matter how many times he asks me to do this, there's no way I'm going to submit. Ve'enoi poina elov klal, and the person ignores the Satan completely. Azai hayetzahara mistalek v'haylechloi. The Satan will leave and go away from the person. This is a fact, that the Satan is permitted to come back a certain number of times. Once you've showed yourself as being able to withstand whatever number Hashem has assigned to you, 20 shots, 30 shots, 3,246 shots, whatever the number is, if you make it through that number, he has to leave at that point. He has to leave you alone. V'chein b'tfila, so too, especially when it comes to davening, when a person is davening Shachris Mincho Amarev, or saying Tehillim, or having a spirit of speaking to Hashem in his own words, Be'inyan HaMachshava is Haboyim Levalvel, regarding all the different thoughts that come into a person's mind to confuse him, not to allow him to concentrate, Homamish Kanal, it's exactly as we just stated, SheHaMachshava Bo'o Kamo Po'omim, Pam Achar Pam Levalvel. The thought comes many, many times. It comes again and again and again to try to confuse the person's tefillah, to try to disturb the person's tefillah. V'tzorech lihiyos chozok, and the person has to be tough, has to be strong. Livli lehistakel oleho klal b'shum oifon, to ignore it completely. Don't start thinking, why are these thoughts coming to me? And why this thought? Zero. Don't get involved in any discussion or any thinking or any analysis about this thought. Just ignore. All you're being asked to do is ignore it. Va'azai tistalik. If you'll do this, you'll see that at a certain point in time, it's going to leave, and you're going to go through a period of smooth sailing, where you're going to see that you're left alone for a certain period of time. V'ayin b'mokam achar mizeh. Look in other places in the Likutei Moran where Rabbi Nizal discusses this subject, and he emphasizes how strong a person has to be mentally not to let this stuff upset you in any way. If you see that you, why I have the tefillin on and the talis and I'm trying to daven, why are these outside thoughts coming in? Don't get upset, don't get concerned, just ignore. That's all you're being asked to do. Ignore it completely. And if it comes back once, twice, three, Ignore, no matter how many times. And if you'll do it, usually you'll get to see that a certain point in time, it stops, and then you give him that green light where you're able to zip way, way, way ahead and make up for all the lost ground that was lost throughout this machine gun fire, this rat-a-tat of the Sultan constantly disturbing you with these interruptions.
How we coincide with what Rabbeinu Zal said with says in Tarach that a person has a problem getting up in the morning. If he gets up like, I think, three or four times, he won't have any problem anymore. How is it just three or four times? It could be a million times. It could be a thousand times.
That's not being said. That statement in the Shulchan Aruch is not being said as a final item. Proof is, ask people, you know, who have gotten up 20 times and yet that. The answer is that's being mentioned in terms of habit, in terms of nature. The Shulchan Aruch there is addressing those people whom before they started learning the Shulchan Aruch, they were people who by nature always got up late. and you try to tell such a person, go to shul early, the person says, impossible. Like, you know, I've been getting up late for 20 years. How are you going to tell me? To such a person, the Shulchan Aruch says, you should know that Hashem has built into a human being such a power that if you decide to affect a major change in your lifestyle, you're going to see that at the beginning of the change, it's very difficult. The first, second, third time, it's very, very hard. Once you get to do several iterations of it, you'll see it becomes much easier and much more enjoyable and better. And so to the example of exercise, you get a person who hasn't done any physical exercise for 3-4 years, and then they get onto that exercise machine and they start again, and they're doing it, and then suddenly an alarm goes off in their body and they get a Charlie horse afterwards that, you know, I can't believe it. 5 years ago when I was doing exercise consistently, I never got this. And it's difficult. You know, it's difficult to weather that Charlie horse, and it's difficult to get back on that machine a second time and go through it again. But if you do 2, 3, 4 times, you break through that changing period, that starting period, then it's downhill from there. It's much easier. You start advancing, 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 and you see that it was just that beginning. That's the specific item that the Shulchan Aruch is addressing over there. It's not saying that the problem won't come up again. Of course it will. But in terms of breaking the nature, you'll see that once you do it 2, 3 times, suddenly you see it wasn't the most ridiculous thing to ask of you. It's possible even for somebody like you to get into a mode where you do get up early, you know, that kind of thing. That's what it's talking about.
The item here, as far as having a time limit on these things, does that mean just the time limit that stretch, and then there'll be another, because you speak in terms of a higher Sutton coming back to the person?
Definitely.
So it means that, let's say, a person will face this for a certain period of time, but then they'll come back in a different way.
Yes.
But in between, there'll be a break, a sort of a smooth period.
Most definitely.
Also, as far as ignoring these items, is that doesn't imply not to daven. That implies ignoring it at the time and davening, or
of course, it means continue davening and ignore the thought. Don't get, because a lot of people get hung up. That term hung up on this thing. Why is this coming? Zero. The law is ignore it. Being told to ignore it. Don't try to be smarter than it's a. They said ignore it, period. Ignore it means don't give it any credence at all, zero thinking, just ignore it, leave it alone.
Say, I know what this happens to a person in, let's say, chakras. Should it be an item, as far ignoring it at the time, should be an item as far as his own personal tefillah point?
Yes, to ask Hashem that he should be able to daven with as few interruptions, and 100%, no question. Baruch Hashem.